Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Melissa Ferrick's song, Careful. Ferrick is a successful singer-songwriter who we've had on the show a number of times. And besides her working on her own music, she designed an online tool for musicians to fund their own careers.
And she teaches a course at Berklee College of Music called Launch Your Do-It-Yourself Career. Ferrick's career demonstrates just how business-savvy aspiring musicians need to be these days, and it's the kind of knowledge that Berklee students need to learn. So says Roger Brown. He's the president of Berklee College of Music, who has a background in humanitarian causes, business, and, of course, music. In fact, he's a drummer. And President Roger Brown joins us now to talk about music education in 2015 and what it takes to make it. And welcome back to Radio Boston, President Brown. Good to have you.
Great to be here.
And we're going to hear from Melissa Ferrick in a moment to sort of get her take on this. But listeners, we want you to join this conversation. What do you think a musical education should entail in the age of iTunes, Spotify, and Kickstarter? What skills do aspiring musicians need? And is the price of a music degree worth it? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Roger Brown, before we start with these big questions that I just laid out, you're such an interesting guy. I want to just give listeners a sense of your background. First of all, how did you get into music? Because you're a drummer. That was your focus early in life. Tell me about your sort of musical path that led to Berklee.
Well, I grew up in North Georgia, and my three key musical influences were the Allman Brothers, Sly and the Family Stone, and James Brown.
Right.
And
some good company there.
And I was the kind of go-to drummer in this small, semi-rural town, and fell in love with music, and it's been a lifelong love. My horizons expanded when I went off to college, and I got more interested in jazz and swing and other types of music, and it's a lifelong exploration. Loving music is every day is interesting, exciting because there's always something new to hear. So I played professionally for a short while in my 20s, but then I got drawn into international development work, and I lived and worked in Kenya, Sudan, Ethiopia, Cambodia, Thailand. And I played music in all those places, but I wasn't pursuing it professionally.
Sure.
And then my wife and I started a company together, which we did for about 16 years. And then I got hired to be president of Berklee.
Okay. Now, before we talk about Berklee, this company that you and your wife spent about 16 years working on, it's a pretty well-known company. You founded Bright Horizons, which is the largest worldwide provider of worksite childcare and early education, right? And
yes.
So that's...
Yes.
You've had a few careers, it sounds like.
I have. I'm a good role model for my students because most of them are going to have different careers. One thing that's interesting, I grew up in a town of 10,000 people, and Bright Horizons now employs 24,000 people.
Wow. Yeah.
So, it's a great company. We had a great experience there. The people who have been running it since we left have done a magnificent job. I'm really proud of it. And it's a great thing to have been involved in, and I'm still on the board, so I still stay involved.
So is your example something that your students should keep in mind? That is, I mean, you've got this passion for music. Here you are, president of a major music school, but you've had this background in business. So it seems like, I mean, is that an important set of tools to have?
Well, I think the most important message or lesson I would share with students is the notion of having some kind of linear career. Especially if you're going to pursue music, is probably not likely.
Yeah.
So you need to pursue your passions, but be open to the possibilities that life presents you. I'm fond of saying to students, if I had set out to be the president of Berklee College of Music, it never would have happened.
Hmm.
It's only by this what seems like meandering at the time from all these different careers. If you think about it, at Berklee, I'm involved with international students, and I've lived in many of their countries. Of course, I'm deeply involved in music. I'm involved in education, and I'm involved in entrepreneurship. So all the things I've done in my life and my career have come together here, and I didn't really understand all that when I was doing it. I was just kind of following my heart and following the opportunities that opened up. And for a young artist, I think that kind of openness is really key.
Yeah. Now, of course, the landscape has changed in a big way out there for folks who are thinking about making music their life and career. Can you just sum up how you viewed that change? In other words, go back to when you were a young guy growing up in the South, maybe imagining that you were going to play drums for the Allman Brothers or whoever it was. You know, what was the sort of musical path then compared to today?
Well, let me. I will try to distill it. I think back in those days, your dream was to form a band or be an artist, be recognized by a record label who would sign you, and then they would take care of all the things that were extraneous to your art.
Right.
Now, the Faustian bargain was they might make you write music you didn't like, or they might make you try to have a stage presence that wasn't authentic to you. But that was the price you paid for their massive investment in you.
Right. So they'd invest in you. They'd market you. They'd work out the concert tours. They'd do all of that.
Yeah, they would take care of all that. The new model, which in some ways is better, is that you decide who you are. You pursue an audience. You pursue various channels of sharing your music with the world. And whereas it used to take $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to record a record, my students can now record a CD-quality record in their dorm room. And whereas it used to take enormous amounts of effort to distribute your music to all these retail outlets, and if you didn't have major label sponsorship, nobody could ever discover your music, now I have students who do one YouTube video and they have millions of followers. So if you can create something exciting and you have enough hustle and chutzpah to get it out to the world, you might get a break. However, it's hard. It's very hard because those people are few and far between, and there are a lot of people who don't want to be marketeers, who don't want to be social media experts and keep mailing lists, and they just want to do music. So I think this world is friendlier to the very entrepreneurial artist in some ways because you don't have the gatekeeper saying, I like your music or I don't. You get to do whatever you want. It's sort of the no excuses era. If you put out a YouTube video and no one watches it, you can't blame your record label.
Right, yeah.
On the other hand, now I think it can be unforgiving. It can be relentless. I have so many students who say, you know, I'm so busy doing all the things that the record label used to do. When do I write music?
Mm.
One thing I always try to remind students is that there has never really been a golden era of the music business. It's always a hard road. And our students are some of the most courageous people on earth to pursue this. And I feel like Berkeley's job is to give them the maximum amount of support and encouragement and ideas and help them be fluent with the technology and the opportunities that are out there so they can maximize their chance of success.
All right, listeners, we're talking to the president of Berklee College of Music, Roger Brown. We're asking you, what do you think a musical education should entail in 2015? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And let's introduce Melissa Farrick. She's a singer-songwriter. She's also an assistant professor at Berklee and teaches a course at Berklee, actually, that's called Launch Your DIY Career to 15 students there. And Melissa Farrick, always good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for asking. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I'd love you to chime in on this conversation, this question about what it takes today. What do you sort of tell your students? I mean, obviously, songwriting is important. Knowing how to play the guitar or whatever it is important. But you've got to sort of talk about a whole bunch of sort of entrepreneurial skills as well, right?
Yeah, I just love listening to President Brown speak. I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity to teach at Berklee and then to hear a guy speak like that so eloquently. As a working musician, you know, which is what I've been for the last 24 years professionally, I've had a very similar experience as Roger Brown, which is that I have meandered a lot and things showed up and I said yes. So the things that I talk about with my students are, which seem like very simple things, but they're not, are things like showing up on time, being kind to the people around you at the club, asking the sound guy if he'd like a cup of coffee when you go get a cup of, how to be a human among humans, really, and how to treat people with compassion. And sometimes I think as a creative person, this right-brained person who, historically has been steeped with emotional problems, and kind of get a bad rap for that. But I think there's a bit of that kind of some people can fall into and almost use to hide behind. And in the music industry or the music business today, there really isn't a door for that anymore. You have to be, you're working all the time. You have to be present all the time. So it's more exhausting now. I used to be on a major label, so it was less exhausting then. But I am a much better musician and person and communicator now than I was then. So I'm really thrilled with the industry right now. I think it's the best time to be making music, and certainly the opportunity to get an education at Berkeley and have a degree in music is it's essential. It's a
and Melissa,
unbelievable
tell,
place, you know?
Tell us something about this Launch Your DIY Career course that you're teaching.
Yeah.
What does that entail?
Well, it kind of goes to one of the things that Roger was talking about, too, which is that I hear and have heard for the last 4 years since I've been at Berkeley over and over again, I don't have any time to do this. You know, they're in college. I mean, this is a serious school. You know, they don't have any time. And so what I've done is, you know, really flipped the classroom with my chair, Bonnie Hayes, and it's a three-hour course that that meets every other week. It starts in the spring. And it's going to be time for them to actually do the work, but with me in the room. So kind of holding hands and guiding them through. And some students are on a different project than other students. You know, not everyone is going to be moving at the same pace, but every student is worth it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every student deserves attention in whatever area it is that they need it. And sometimes they don't know what area they need it in. And I'm also there to help them realize that and see it and not be afraid of it.
Yeah. Roger Brown, I want to come back to you and ask a really basic question that a lot of folks in higher education are answering now. And given the high cost of higher education, the cost is it worth it? And we took a look at Berkeley's rating, for example, in the U.S. Department of Education College Scorecard. And it says the average annual cost of attending Berkeley, $43,000, and the median earnings of former students who receive federal financial aid 10 years after entering Berkeley, just over $30,000. So, you know, speak to that question. Is it worth it?
Yeah. Before I do that, let me say Melissa Ferrick is one of my favorite artists on earth. She is a fierce, wonderful, humane, passionate person. So if you don't know her music, do yourself a favor and check it out. And the beauty of the world we live in now is
you can do it.
You can do it.
Yeah, and I second that, by the way. Melissa's been a frequent guest on our show, so I agree with Roger Brown, Melissa. But go ahead, Roger. Tackle that question.
Okay. Is college worth it, and is in particular an arts or music college experience worth it? Well, let me speak first to the College Scorecard, which I think was an interesting project, and I admire the intent, which is to say to young people, okay, here's what it looks like. The conclusion is sort of self-evident. If you go to a business school or a technology school, you're going to make a lot more money than if you study liberal arts or music. One thing the study, though, doesn't point out is that artists and musicians usually have 3 to 5 years of aimless wandering. But while they're trying to figure out what they're going to do, they're working at coffee shops and they're waiting tables and they're pursuing their music. Unlike if you go to a business school, you might get hired by an accounting firm, and day one you have a real job. You have, you know, a W-2 that you fill out, and you know, musicians don't have that easy path. A few do. Some
Sure.
of our alums get hired by Hans Zimmer or by some technology company to do music, but most are struggling and trying to figure it out. So we have data from our alumni that show, yes, for the first 0 to 5 years it can be rough. The second five-year period, the incomes increase 75%.
Mm-hmm.
The next five-year period, they increase 40%. After that, they go up about 10 to 20% per year. So
I also wonder, you know, just the happiness factor. I mean, I don't know if there's sort of empirical research on this, but you're creating art. You're doing your music. You're doing your – I mean, that's got to be worth something.
There are data that suggests that people who choose artistic and creative paths are happier. You know, I don't know how do you assess that? But I think that the scorecard does I think an admirable job of trying to understand what compensation looks like. But another factor which we should be candid about is that a lot of the income a young artist earns playing weddings and bar mitzvahs and that sort of thing is probably informal income and may not even get reflected in some of these studies.
Right.
I'm not advocating that.
I get it.
I think it's just a fact.
That's the real world. Yeah.
Tips and that kind of thing. So. Anyway, yeah, it's you shouldn't enter this if you think the goal is to maximize your income 5 to 10 years out.
You know, you said something on this show the last time you were with us. You said a person who chooses to pursue music or dance or music theater is a fearless and courageous person. The world they're entering is very uncertain.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's true. It's true.
Listen, we want to get some callers in. We've got a lot of them backed up. We've only got a few minutes left. So let's go to Eric, who's calling from Watertown. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Thanks to the president of Berkeley. You're great. I'm not a Berkeley graduate. I was stuck to school. For a while, I didn't because I was in the rock scene, and I thought, you know, Berkeley kids are this or that. But over the years, I've been lucky enough to work in many facets of the Boston music scene, and some of the best musicians I know come from your school. I've seen a couple of Melissa's shows, but she's amazing and always has been. My thing is that there's an elephant in the room right now, and it's the fact that music is free. I've worked my entire life. I'm 45 years old. I've worked my entire life to create something. Imagine if you're a carpenter and you make really great chairs. And then one day you wake up and there are really great chairs for free on every corner. And what are you going to do? And to me, it's like a rich kid's game, and I'm not a rich kid. I've been very lucky. My wife works.
Eric, you've put the big challenge on the table. Let's get Roger Brown and Melissa Farrick to respond to that.
Yeah, let me say first, I think the fact that somehow the world has convinced itself that the work of artists that can be digitized should be free is works in service of large technology companies, but not in service of society or artists. And we need to change that mentality. The good thing is that services like streaming, even though a lot of artists don't like streaming, at least it's monetizing intellectual property again. And if we could get the consumers in India and China and Brazil to monetize their consumption of music, there might actually be a much bigger pie in the world than there was even in the mid-'80s. But, Eric, I'm totally with you. I think we've got to stand up and say, look, this music is of value. And there are plenty of ways that if you think of the way television is working, television has benefited from the ubiquity of access, and they found a way to monetize it. As musicians and artists, we have to do the same. One final comment. I used to have the same chip on my shoulder about Berkeley musicians because I was so damn intimidated by them. And sometimes they can be a little cocky. I always say to my graduates, you know, just because you went to Berkeley, you know, there are a lot of great musicians in the world who didn't go to Berkeley, and don't feel like you have to show off the full range of your harmonic knowledge on every gig or every song you play. So be humble and respect those people who didn't get the chance to go to a place like Berkeley.
Melissa Farrick, we only have 30 seconds left, but I'd love to sort of come to you with the caller's question, this conundrum facing artists like yourself. The music's free out there. How do you deal with that?
You just keep doing it. You know, you can't worry about the rest of the world not buying or not paying. I opened for Joan Armatrading last night and made $540 in record sales and got $500 for the gig for a half hour's worth of work. So, you know, it takes a long time. It takes patience and consistency. And I totally agree with Roger. I think this will change. Once it hits Hollywood and the film industry, we'll all get paid. And get your ISRC codes. So,
all right. Well, some optimism there from Melissa Farrick, singer-songwriter. Her latest self-titled album came out in July. She's also an associate professor in Berkeley's songwriting department. Melissa, thank you as always. Always good to have you.
Thanks.
And Roger Brown, president of the Berklee College of Music. Thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And we'll go out on another song off of Melissa Farrick's most recent self-titled album. And stay with us, listeners. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
So small, sweet and cold. A dozen oysters to help me taste the beauty in getting old. The smaller the thing, the bigger it feels, the less these days I gotta worry about. You got the kind of smile that holds me down. The simpler the words, the more they mean, the less I try to fix you, the more I can fix me. You've got the kind of smile that holds me down. Oh, it seemed the whole town was out that night with their suntanned hands and their sandy.